Well, hello. Good to see you again, if virtually. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, this here electronic engineering podcast brought to you by eejournal.com. Yes, I am Amelia Dalton, your hostess with the mostess, and this week we're talking about actionable intelligence, which we all need a bit of these days, right? So let's start things off with a little news you may have missed. Bat actionable intelligence. Now, we all know that bats use echolocation, right? The use of sound waves and echoes to determine where objects are in space. And bats actually send out sound waves from their noses and their mouths, which was totally new to me. So when those sound waves hit an object, they produce echoes. Those echoes bounce off that object and then return to the bat's ears. So based on bat intelligence, can we make drones smarter? Well, a team at Purdue University thinks so. Get this, a team of Purdue mathematicians have found that with a little help from some microphones, a speaker, a whole lot of algebra and geometry, they could hear the shape of a room mounted on a drone. So there are two fundamental engineering problems at play here: localization, determining where you are in an environment, and mapping, determining the shape of your environment. So keeping those two challenges in mind, the ultimate goal of this project was to reconstruct the configuration of rooms using only echoes picked up by microphones on a drone. Sounds easy, yeah? Well, it's not. So this is how it works. First, a microphone hears an echo, and then the time difference between the moment the sound was produced and the time it was heard is recorded. And then that time difference is key to showing the distance traveled by the sound after bouncing off the wall. Now, one of the biggest issues here is a process called echo sorting, which determines which distance corresponds to which wall. You see, sorting these echoes is super important to know which wall heard which sound, and if those walls really exist. So, no ghost walls allowed. And what they found was super cool. This team from Purdue University found that echolocation is possible with a minimal setup of four microphones arranged in a non-planar shape with a loudspeaker emitting one signal. And then their algorithm had no problem reconstructing a room. As you can probably imagine, this is just a tiny step in this process. Further research, as pointed out by this team at Purdue, will need to include other not-so-easy-to-set-up scenarios, like when the movement of a drone is restricted, or when the drone listens to the echoes of consecutive sounds as it's moving. Now, this research goes way beyond just drones. This team thinks that this technology could easily be incorporated into a device that could be carried by a person, affixed to a car, or even used underwater. And that this type of echolocation could make a big difference in designs like car backup cameras, where having more than one signal input could prevent solely relying on one type of input, while also improving the chances that objects could be detected more accurately and in a wider variety of conditions. Super cool, right? So if you want even more information about this echolocation study at Purdue University, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time to bring in the one, the only, Nigel Forrester from Concurrent Technologies. Nigel and I are talking about radio frequency signal intelligence, when to use CPUs for inference at the edge, and when not to use CPUs, and exactly what he thinks actionable intelligence means today. All right, let's go. My guest today is Nigel Forrester from Concurrent Technologies. Thank you so much for joining me, Nigel.
Amelia, it's always a pleasure, and thank you very much for having me again. Okay, so you presented a session at ETT this year called Inventing Actionable Intelligence. So first off, what do you mean by actionable intelligence, and what kind of applications are we talking about here?
Very good question. So actionable intelligence is really the ability to make a decision based on the data that you've got at the point of gathering the data. So what you want to be able to do is to very quickly, in real time, as the sensors are feeding data into your equipment, be able to actually come up with an object of interest or something that you can then enable or do something about. In other words, you can action that intelligence on the fly.
Okay, so specifically for RF SIGINT applications, what kind of solution are we really looking at there? And maybe tell my audience what RF SIGINT means.
Yeah, so radio frequency signal intelligence is really the ability to look at the RF spectrum and decide who's transmitting, what spectral density we've got, what frequency they're on, what type of network, and so on. So if you think about all the things that generate RF data, like Wi-Fi, your mobile phone, personal radios, communications devices, things like that, in the sort of environment that we're talking about, in the sort of military arena, these types of devices, you might want to actually have very clear identity as to, you know, who's transmitting. Is it friend or foe? There's some very clever technologies around these days, things like software-defined radio, which allow radios to keep frequency hopping. So it's actually quite difficult to keep track. And the ability, what I was really talking about, was the ability to do that using artificial intelligence techniques. And in order to do that, you need, or one way of doing it is to use a computer type capability, which has got good compute resources. So perhaps many cores, lots of memory, some good local storage, perhaps, because you want to actually track the data in real time for later analysis as well. But you also need to be able to get that data into the computer quickly. And that's why we're talking about high speed connectivity. And in our latest processor board, we've enhanced that somewhat because we've now got a compute board with a 40 gig optical interface directly onto the backplane. That's first for us.
Excellent. Now, let's talk about CPU boards for inference at the edge. Now, those applications would need a lot of special requirements and components. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes. Although when we say special, I think we've got a class of inference at the edge. So this is collecting data and analyzing it and inferring something on the fly that are capable of doing that for certain types of applications. So RF spectral analysis is one of those applications where a CPU is actually quite good, because you need to be able to keep chopping and changing, saying sort of what if type things, as well as actually doing the data analysis. And CPUs typically are quite good at that. So as I was describing a minute ago, having something with many cores, lots of good connectivity to get the data in, and also some additional capability to do other things with it, is exactly what you need, really.
Now, for applications where a CPU board can't handle, say, radar, image, and video applications, what do we do here?
Yeah, that's a bit more of an interesting scenario, because many of the other types of applications that you might want to use inference at the edge to help analyze what's going on, as you rightly said, have, you know, more streaming data, high-speed streaming data, perhaps coming off video cameras or radar, LiDAR-type sensors, satellite imaging devices. So you need to be able to process that much higher volume of data in real time, and you can't perhaps do all of that on just a central processor alone. So what we've developed is effectively an ability to accelerate that artificial intelligence inference at the edge processing by adding an FPGA-based accelerator next to the processor, the CPU processor. And we can do that either on a one-to-one basis or a one central processor to two accelerator engines to significantly enhance the performance. And the tool that we are using, which is based on the Intel OpenVINO toolkit, enables you to take the model, the neural network model that you're running on your central processor, and relatively easily it creates what's called an intermediate representation of that model, and then that's downloaded to both the central processor and the accelerator engine to sort of at least initially run that just in an accelerated way. So you as a user, you don't have to know what the technology is behind the accelerator, although there are some nice things that you can do to optimize that model.
That's cool. Okay, so in your presentation, Nigel, you mentioned a heterogeneous resource pool. So first off, What do you mean by that? And what are the benefits we're looking at here?
By heterogeneous resource pool, what I really mean is the ability for the, in our case, this inference at the edge application, to be able to take advantage of all of the processing resources that you throw at it. So that may be just a central processor, and that may be good enough. But if you want to add something like an FPGA accelerator, you do that by literally putting the board into the system, doing a few tweaks to the model, and it effectively uses whatever resources are available sort of invisibly to the user. Now, that's a gross simplification, of course, but that's largely what it does. You know, if you want to add another FPGA accelerator, again, it's a slot-in option, a bit like a sledgehammer to crack a nut. That's not really true, but effectively what you're doing is you're just adding new different types of resources into your overall pool, and the software takes care of running the right bits of the inferencing algorithm on the right type of processor.
All right, Nigel, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, as a difference from the rest of my interviews, I let you write them. So please tell me your story.
Well, because I've been talking about artificial intelligence this week, Concurrent Technologies, our main headquarters is in Colchester in the UK, but we have a satellite engineering center of excellence in a town called Reading in the UK. And all our artificial intelligence product software is done out of the Reading Satellite Engineering Center. They've sort of got lots of experience, but in Reading in about the 2000 era, the professor of cybernetics is a gentleman called Kevin Warwick. He was quite an eccentric character. So he did things like inject a chip into his arm, connect it up to his central nervous system. He managed to persuade his wife to do the same so that they could telepathically connect to each other by squeezing their arm and actually feeling that impulse, sort of trying to move towards a sort of cyborg type environment. And he was prophesizing at the time that within 10 years we'd all be using this type of capability to sort of be far more advanced than humans. So I'm pleased to say that, you know, that's not really come to fruition, but the sort of things that we're doing are a bit more down to earth, really.
And your Reading employees are not, you know, cyberly connected, are they?
Not that I know of, no. But they may surprise me, I suppose.
Excellent. Well, Nigel, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia. Look forward to it.
So I know a lot of you out there are working from home these days. And you know what? Yours truly and the whole EE Journal gang have worked from home for a long time. For me, it's been about 14 years. So, for you newbies out there, or for those of you struggling with how to cope with this new WFH thing, or maybe you just want a couple tips, or maybe you just want to avoid work a little bit longer, I would highly recommend checking out one of our newest feature articles on eejournal.com called Work From Home Survival Guide, EE Journal's Pro Tips. And you can read my section about halfway through, nearer to the end. And of course, I've included a link below the player on this week's fish frying page on eejournal.com that will take you right there. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow me or us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by you know who. That'd be me. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, or even, I don't know, your best cat meme, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of March 20th, 2020, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.